time. And now we have the pleasure. I think we're going to be joined by the bluesologist, Norman Otis Richmond. Are you there, Norman?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Good. I was so glad to be talking to you. You can help me out with our history. It's Black Music Month.
Yes.
We'll begin in June. And explain to me this rather crooked story. In 1979, Dizzy Gillespie visited the White House together with others. I'm reading all these things you've written. And they asked that President Jimmy Carter recognize Black Music Month, and he did. But President Obama improved on it somewhat. He changed the title to African American Music Appreciation Month.
Correct.
And they left Norman Otis Richmond with Black Music Month. Now, what's going on there? Why is there agreement about this?
The situation is that President Barack Hussein Obama has basically taken an international music and nationalized it. Made it an African in America thing, when the term African American, the term African American was made popular by Jesse Jackson, because the New York Times quoted him, and the New York Times, remember, they stopped using Black American and they used African American.
Yes.
But
I did that myself. I thought, okay, the captain of the team has said it's now African American. I'm going to repeat that. And then I realized that we didn't make a first down with that. We had to punt.
Well, what happened was that the term African American really, it's been in the African people in America in the history for many years. But it must be mentioned that a guy by the name of Carlos Cooks, who was the head of the African Pioneer Movement, that was an organization started after Marcus Garvey passed away. Now, Carlos Cooks was from one of the Caribbean islands, Santo Domingo, and he basically came up with the term African American, and he used the term African American to describe all of the African people from Canada to South America. When he used African American, he was using it like the Cubans used. We are in the Americas. America is not the United States of America alone. We are in the Americas, and Jose Marti, the great Cuban patriot, talked about the Americas. So Carlos Cooks used African American to refer to all of us in the Western Hemisphere. And what President Barack Obama did was to go back and basically nationalize it, and just talked about, for lack of a better term, the American Negro. Barack Hussein Obama, he left out Black people in Canada, Black people in Cuba, Black people in Jamaica, Barbados, Guyana.
So in other words, he's only looking for voters.
I don't know what he was looking for, but at the same month, he declared June as Caribbean American Month, which doesn't make any sense. When I say it doesn't make any sense, it's like I personally have no problem with Caribbean American Month, but why would you put it in June, the same month as Black Music Month?
Yeah, because that's where those folks are, I guess, in it, according to the Democratic Party. Hey, by the way, the title that he gave it, it just took all the steam out of it. It's really a kind of thing, label that would be written by a committee, from the sound of it. Because he put the word appreciation in, too, to make sure that we could have trouble remembering what the heck he said. But
I remember we used to have, when I was going to school, I remember in junior high school, we had Music Appreciation Month. And the music that they were teaching us to appreciate was classical music, which, frankly, I don't have a problem with. But why can't we appreciate Bobby Blue Bland and the Mighty Sparrow and Nina Simone and people like that?
Black,
you know,
Stalin. This is, we were speaking to Norman Otis Richmond. The subject is, of course, June is Black Music Month. But you remind us of some history in your writings. And you say that the first group of black performers from America to go, I think, maybe abroad and representing the music, was the Fisk Jubilee Singers in 1873. Who were they? What was that experience?
The Fisk Jubilee Singers were the, as far as my research says, and I could be wrong, but I'm quoting Langston Hughes wrote a book when he said that the Fisk Jubilee Singers went to Scotland, they went to Russia. It wasn't the Soviet Union at that time.
No, it was the Tsar, actually.
It's Russia now. They went to Scotland. They went all over Europe and basically knocked the socks off of the Europeans. And at that particular time, it's not like now if you go to Europe, you know, Africans are all over Europe. But at that particular time, Europe was, you know, that was before you had any Africans. So these were mostly European people listening to gospel music and loving it to death, you know. And that was the Fisk Jubilee Singers coming out of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. That's a university in a historically black university in Tennessee, and mm-hmm. they went and you know since that time then you had the jazz folks you know Louis Armstrong took the world by storm and then you know bebop took the world by storm and then you had Millie Small from Jamaica she went to I think she was the first African artists from the Western Hemisphere to go to Africa. That was in, early 60s, maybe. My Boy Lollipop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jimmy Cliff went to Africa. And I think Jimmy Cliff has probably went to Africa more than any other artist from the Western Hemisphere. But, you know, mm-hmm. since that time, black music or African music is basically, is I don't want to sound too chauvinistic, but it is one of the most popular, if not the most popular music on the planet Earth, and when I say black music, I'm talking about everything.
No, you'd have
gospel,
to. I think it is. I,
reggae, yeah.
I don't think anybody can compete. when you think about it, the impact. I can recall being told and sitting up in my chair when I heard it from a professor. He said, the only unique cultural contribution America has made to the world is black music. He said, that's it. He said everything else, you know, anybody else did, but no, it's a unique contribution, and it's going to move far and wide. By the way, we ought to give the Tsar credit. He did support the Union in the war against the Confederates when the British and the French supported the Confederacy. I think the Tsar was probably glad to see the Fisk singers.
Right.
He probably said, see, I told you. That, for him, that must have been the biggest bonus. Hey, look who's coming. The Jubilee Singers. We're speaking to Norman Otis Richmond. Norman, we got somebody very important has passed here, Fitzroy Gordon. He was the on-air personality, the radio station founder of, what's it called, 65, G5?
G98.
Yeah. And you knew Fitzroy Gordon, and how important is he? He got a quite extensive obituary in today's Globe and Mail. I urge everybody to read it, but tell us what your thoughts about him.
Well, I met Fitzroy Gordon many, many moons ago, and I don't know if I can mention another radio station on the air.
Oh, go ahead. We're very liberal here.
He was on,
I think.
He used to be on Chin Radio from like 2 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock in the morning of every Saturday night, and he would invite me down, and you know I would take a little taxi, go down, and take a taxi home, and we would play music, and he was a sportsman. He was into track and field, and I knew a little bit about track and field, and he was a cricketer, and my father-in-law Esmond Seymour Kentish was a cricket man from Jamaica. He was also the manager of the West Indian cricket team, but he also was a great fast bowler. And so I knew a little bit. I mean, I could drop some names in terms of, I don't know that much about cricket, but
That would make two of us.
He embraced me because I knew track and field. I knew a little bit about cricket. And we shared the same taste in music. He loved, we used to have this debate over Marvin Gaye versus David Ruffin. David Ruffin was the lead singer of the Temptations. And he was a Marvin Gaye man, and I was a David Ruffin man. And we would always have these contests, and they would always kick my butt. It would, everybody would say, Marvin Gaye, Marvin Gaye, Marvin Gaye, you know. Uh-huh. And we talked until I think he got so popular, I used to talk to him on the phone, and I guess he had to change his number because he became the CEO of G98.
That'll happen. I've lost a few CEOs of my life. Yeah.
I basically lost contact with him, but we were...
But what did he... How about the establishing that station? Was that a good station in your view? What did it do? What accomplish?
I think it's one of the best stations out there. I mean, they have news. They have a woman there. I'm having a senior moment at the wrong time, but they have a woman that does the news at 6 o'clock. Uh-huh. Fernandez, her name is Fernandez, and she is as sharp as a tack. I mean, she does news from North America, the Caribbean, Africa, and the whole. And the whole world, uh-huh. And you know, they play a wide variety of music: R&B, reggae, calypso. They do gospel.
And that reflect his input, his handling. That's the vision he wanted.
Yes, yeah. I guess if I had any kind of criticism of them, I don't think they play enough music from the continent. Uh-huh. I would like to see them play more music from the African continent. Mm-hmm. But no, I think that is one of the best, if not the best, radio station.
Yeah.
In North America. Uh-huh. Having been born in America and knowing a little bit about the American situation, we African people in America, and I don't know if it's African people in America, but chauvinism, and I don't know if it's chauvinism or it's a lot of times we don't. We only play music made by black people born in America. Mm-hmm. Although Howard University, many years ago, I remember going to being in Washington, D.C. and listening to Howard University station, and they were Pan-African, and as well as they played the Coltrane, the Delphonics, and Mighty Sparrow, mm-hmm. Dinah Washington, Brooke Benton, and... But you know, as a rule, the urban stations and they're urban. I guess if you're urban, you're slick. So I guess you can't play rural music. Uh-huh. So you know, I guess you can play Muddy Waters because he migrated from Mississippi to the urban area of Chicago, but Fitzroy Station plays a wide variety of music and has pretty good news. I must admit, yeah.
Yeah, we're speaking to Norman Otis Richmond, the bluesologist. And by the way, Norman, where can people find your writing and you on the net and on the radio?
I write a weekly column. A monthly column in the Burning Spear newspaper, mm-hmm. and I do a weekly show on Black Power 96. Mm-hmm. Black Power 96, that's from St. Petersburg, Florida. Mm-hmm. I also, my show is rebroadcast on Radio Regent here in Toronto, and I have a regular guest, Dr. Gerald Horn. He's on every week, and... you know, I think we were the first people to play Mumia Abu-Jamal in Canada. Uh-huh. And so they can hear me like on Black Power 96, uh-huh. Radio Regent, and you can read me in the Burning Spear. Uh-huh. And from time to time, I'm published by Black Agenda Report, Glenn Ford's
Great public, great site, yes. Great people.
Glenn Ford and Bruce Dixon, my good friend Bruce Dixon, and I think Bruce is in the Atlanta Green Party. He's a Green Party man. He's
a very innovative thinker. He's one of the people, it seems to me, has given a lot of very helpful input to the Green Party. He says, let's build these things, and not just for the elections. Let's do this year-round and for every aspect of the society, try to build it.
And he is
people
a
are, some
very,
people just he's a, enter elections.
He's a technological genius, too.
Well, I wish. Now, that is saying something. And all I can say is I envy that. This is Norman Otis Richmond. And Norman, I think I'd be remiss if I don't take you back to a remark you made here, because my bell rang in my head when you said it. You used to argue with the now deceased Fitzroy Gordon. He was for touted the lead man of the Temptations,
David
took up
Marvin Gaye.
Marvin Gaye. So now you got to explain to us what's that about? What was your point?
We were basically talking about who was our favorite singer.
Yeah. So now why do you prefer him? You're the bluesologist. We got to put you on the spot.
Prefer David Ruffin?
Yes.
Marvin Gaye said he was afraid of David Ruffin because, when I say afraid of him vocally, because he actually said he thought David Ruffin could sing better than him.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that down. Check this out.
David Ruffin could sing.
I could
sing,
win a few bets here. You got to be, you hope, I can take this to the bank, I hope.
Well, David Ruffin was sang with Sam Cooke, Mahalia Jackson, and Marvin Gaye was a gospel singer too. Mm-hmm. But once again, that's all of that is subjective. You know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
And I met both of them. I saw both of them perform. I interviewed both of them, and I have a minority position, I think, you know.
Well, I got to say, we all do respect your taste in music and your knowledge of it. Tell us about the man. What was he like as an interview? What sort of personality did he have?
You talking about Marvin or David or both?
David. I might take you to Marvin, but I think it's news to a lot of listeners, I think, to talk about David Ruffin, right?
Oh, David Ruffin. First of all, David Ruffin he was born in Why Not, Mississippi.
Why Not?
Yeah, Why Not, Mississippi. He went to Memphis, Tennessee as a young person, and he was a jockey. he was a jockey.
He rode horses?
Yeah, he was a jockey. He was a skinny guy, very skinny guy. He came to Detroit, Michigan, and he helped build Motown. When I say Bill Motown, I mean he actually helped Berry Gordy's father build the building.
Literally.
He was Chef Boyardee. He was one of the best cooks that ever walked the earth.
Could compete with Marvin Gaye.
Yeah. And he was a drummer. David was a drummer too. He was a drummer too. And if you see that film, there's a film about the Temptations, a TV film. It basically showed him. His brother Jimmy Ruffin was a great singer as well, and I think David was a solo artist before he joined the Temptations. But he took the stage. His brother invited him on stage. I guess it was the 20 grand in Detroit, and David. He basically rocked the house, and they drafted him into the group, and he stayed with the Temptations from 1964 to 1968. He was put out the group because let me put this very kindly. He did not lack self-esteem. Put it that way.
He didn't lack what?
He did not have a problem with self-esteem.
Yeah.
He was very...
I'm looking at a picture of him someone just handed me. He's a very intense-looking gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
And horn rimmed glasses.
He
looks a little like Bo Diddley in the picture I'm looking at.
And he was not afraid of white men. I mean, he would like fight. He would fight, and he would rumble in a second.
Jack Johnson. And
he spent some time in prison. You know, tax evasion and
tax evasion that involves self esteem. I'm not sharing with you. I earned this money. You're describing a guy who just almost accidentally ended up on a stage and took over the place.
That was him, yeah. If you look at the videos, I mean, he was one of the. He and Eddie Kendricks were the lead singer, primary lead singers, but David Ruffin was one of the best dancers, and on stage he was. He was dressed, but if you saw him, like after the shows and stuff, he might have on cowboy boots and a cowboy hat, and you know, he wasn't. He was very, very, very casual, like off stage.
Uh-huh.
But he.
What happened to him when they got? He had to leave the group because he was too sold on himself. What happened?
He might say he was going up. What happened was one, he had been missing shows and all of that stuff. So he basically told the Temptations, you know, to hold the court down. He was going. He was going on a date with the Dean Martin's daughter. So he.
Boy, I asked the best questions.
He went. Left the group, you know, singing on there. I mean, they out there. I think they were at the might have been at the Copa. He says, you know, hold everything down, but I have a date with Dean Martin's daughter, and he was.
I wouldn't want to have been at that meeting.
He had some. I don't think he was all there in terms of mental.
But did he was he able to sustain a career? I mean, did, was he? He didn't go broke or anything, did he?
I think he went broke, came back. Yeah.
Did you interview him when he was on top or when he had fallen out?
Everybody liked him so much that he would always come back because Hall & Oates brought him back. Hall & Oates brought him and Eddie Kendricks back to the mm-hmm. Apollo Theater, and Minister Louis Farrakhan preached at his eulogized him at when he passed away.
My gosh.
He was in contact with Minister Farrakhan, and he was telling Minister Farrakhan that, you know, they were.
Isn't that interesting culturally, the number of major black artists who actually have associated themselves or with Louis Farrakhan?
Yeah, well, Farrakhan, Ruffin said they were the record company, were paying him with drugs and not money, you know.
Uh-huh.
And Farrakhan was trying to help him, and he passed away, during that time.
I see. Well, I should ask you again one last time, and before we go, this is, of course, Norman Otis Richmond, the bluesologist. How did you find him as an interview? Was he a friendly guy, smart, able? What did you think of him?
I think he was one. Yeah, he was very, 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 very bright. Very mm-hmm. bright. Extremely bright. And, he had so many life experiences, and he had traveled so much. And then so he started out, say, back Mahalia Jackson. He was with Mahalia Jackson. He was with Sam Cooke. Then he had traveled the world.
Well.
He read a few books. Mm-hmm. I found him, and he was very articulate.
Wow. Well, Norman Otis Richmond, is a kick to talk to you. We got Black Music Month coming up in June. We'll have to talk to you again at that time, and I thank you for selling me on David Ruffin. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right.
This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, or the David Ruffin Fan Club. And Phil, you had an announcement.
Yeah. Workers United has a strike on against the Rainforest Cafe in Niagara Falls. And we have a mass picket every Saturday at 3 o'clock because this boss doesn't want to make a deal. He wants to keep these people out in the street. So
say it slowly. What?
He wants to keep these people out on the street and doesn't want to make a contract with them. So
what can people do?
They can go to Niagara Falls on Saturday, which is a nice place to be.
And go
and pick at the Rainforest Cafe at 3 p.m.
Great. Well, you take it from the other Phil.
I'll be there.
Yeah. Are you going to be there?
I'm
going
to be there.
All right. Listen, Phil Connor will be there and signing photographs and that kind of stuff, as usual. And we have to thank Mick, and hey, thank you again for supporting this station, and you can still get a prize trip to Dubrovnik for two. Just make a donation to CIUT.FM. This is Phil Taylor. See you next week.